guys, welcome back to another episode of Seriously Your Podcast. Today we'll be talking about sexual violence. I'm Rin.
I'm Simran.
I'm Liz.
And today we have our special guest.
My name is Devika.
Maybe you can tell us more about yourself.
Hi, yeah, sure. My name is Devika, like I mentioned. I'm 27 this year. And I do a lot of things, lah. So usually when people ask me to talk about myself, I kind of start rambling and just in hopes that I can find some time to think about what I can actually say. So, okay, let's just start with what I do on a day-to-day. I'm a financial advisor.
Okay.
I'm also an actor, independent actor in Vasantham, as well as advocate for sexual violence awareness and mental health awareness, basically social responsibilities.
So you work with AWARE, correct?
Yeah, I volunteer with AWARE. I think that's a more accurate way to put it.
Okay, so before we get into the episode, just to plug our socials, you can look under our Instagram. Everything's there under our Time Tree. So we have our...
Time Tree.
Oh my god.
Link tree.
And our link tree. Everything's there. We have a Ko-fi as well.
So buy us a coffee and, you know, help us, support us and help us grow as content creators for you guys.
Mm. Yes.
Okay. Also, before we start the episode, because this episode is more sensitive in nature, so we just want to give a trigger warning to everyone listening that we'll be talking about some trauma and assault. So if it's uncomfortable for you and you like want to like no skip this episode, then yeah,
just a little bit of discretion.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
So so maybe you can start with your story, like a brief summary of what happened to you.
Okay. So I was 7 years old when I started experiencing abuse at the hands of my family friend. He was a friend of my father's and someone that my relatives in India were close to as well. So I didn't understand what he was doing, and it wasn't like he started off with like very obvious signs of abuse. It was all very gradual. He started off with you know, hugging me and then slowly like kissing me on the cheeks, and that kind of escalated to more serious forms of abuse. So essentially he groomed me into thinking this was okay until he could just kind of like make use of me in whatever ways he wanted. It was only after like a year of the abuse that my parents found out, because he tried to do something with my older sister, and she was old enough to understand that something was not okay. She reached out to my parents, and then my parents knew that something was off. Immediately reported him to the police, asked me what was happening, and that's when I told them that this guy has been doing all these things to me. And yeah, then it was just really just the police report, the statements, court, everything. And honestly, back then I did not understand the severity of what was happening. It was only after a couple of years that it hit me that this man had violated me to this extent. And it was a very isolating experience.
How did you figure out that what had happened to you was not normal?
I think it's because of health education lessons. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was in school, and part of health education lessons in like primary four or something is about like abuse. About molestation.
Stuff, right?
Yeah, like they talk about molestation and things like that. And I remember very specifically the image in the textbook, which was about a lady being caressed or molested, that's the better word, molested by a stranger in the bus. And so the class was about what you should do in the event that you get molested. And for me, that was like it's pretty much the same thing that happened to me. And that's when it clicked for me that this was abuse. I actually encountered abuse. And I felt this distinct disconnection from reality. And it was a very isolating experience. I think that's the only word I can use, because I didn't hear of anyone else in that classroom experiencing anything like that. I didn't read about anything else. So I thought that I was the only person who encountered this.
How did you cope with it afterwards? Because there weren't a lot of people around you who went through the same experience that you did. So it must have been really hard.
Yeah, it was. I lost friends because I started becoming like kind of weird. I was becoming very introverted, but like not in a good way. You know, I was very reserved. I didn't know how to talk to people. I started doing poorly in school. The teachers started taking note that I was, you know, underperforming. And they just thought that I was acting up or something. They didn't really understand that I was going through some really big emotional turmoil. Mm-hmm. And I actually didn't cope with it very well, which is why all this happened, right? And as a result of being this weird kid, I also started getting bullied. So it was really like...
another thing to
double whammy.
I was like, yeah. I really don't need this right now, you know?
Yeah.
So it was a very debilitating period in my life, and I was very close to trigger warning, self-harm. I was very close to hurting myself or taking my own life because my future just looked so bleak. I could not even, like right now it felt so, in that moment it felt so empty and it felt so, it felt like it was never going to end. And I couldn't think past that. I didn't know what was going to lie after that, you know. So it was until I read a book about self-help. It was completely by accident. I came across a story by Oprah Winfrey about her journey from, you know, through a childhood of abuse and neglect and a lot of hardship, how she overcome those things and became one of the most influential people on the planet.
Yeah.
So that was the first time I read about another person encountering sexual abuse. And that one person that I could relate to was enough for me to feel like maybe it's not all over. Yeah, so that's when there was this shift in perspective. That's when I could see, okay, maybe there is a future. Maybe I can come out of this. Maybe I'm not just this victim of someone else's actions, right?
Yeah.
And that's when I started like just envisioning a future where I can also be like Oprah in some ways, helping people feel less alone in their struggle.
Mm. Yeah. I want to like backtrack a little bit to when you were in school.
Mm.
And I think when we were first speaking to you, you told us that you tried to reach out to a teacher, right?
Yeah, I did actually.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't go very well. Yeah. Very well. My teacher didn't believe me, basically. Because when the bullying got really bad, to the extent where I was even getting like physically bullied by people. Let's not go into the details of it. It was horrible. Kids are terrible, okay?
Yeah,
they can be really mean. I just kind of wanted to explain to my teacher what's happening. And we had a journaling exercise as part of schoolwork. And in the journal, I wrote that I have been abused. Back then, I didn't feel safe talking to my parents, not because they were bad parents or anything, but after like the court case and everything, my parents actually told me to never talk about it again. Mm-hmm. Like not at all with the worst intentions in mind. They just really wanted me to forget about it.
Like move along with
your
life.
Yeah, they really thought that if they said that I would forget about it, mm-hmm. that I would... I can go back to normal. But I don't think they realized how much those words stayed with me all those nights when I couldn't sleep and all those nights that I was struggling to understand what happened, why it happened.
Yeah.
And had they not said those things, I think I would have reached out to my parents and told them, like, I'm struggling, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, like, the main, like, why I remember that so vividly was because, like, when you're growing up, teachers are one of your outlets, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So I feel like it's important to hear what every kid has to say.
Yeah.
Like before, you know, condemning or shaming or anything like that, or just saying that what they are saying is not true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess for the people that, you know, hearing this for the first time that don't really know what exactly happened with the teacher, do you mind like kind of running us through it?
Yeah, so I wrote it in my journal that I went through abuse, that the kids in the school, they're calling me this name, the word slut. They were calling me a slut. I didn't even know what it meant.
Yeah, I didn't. Yeah, I was so young at it.
I was like 10.
Yeah.
I thought they were calling me slug. Like, yeah, I thought, yeah, yeah, like, and then later they like wrote it down, and that's when I was like, I've never seen this word before. But I knew it was something bad because, like, the way they talk to you, yeah, like, yeah, you can, yeah, just tell from certain,
like, ostracism.
The tonality.
Yeah, and I wrote it down. I misspelled it in the journal as well. But anyways, my teacher read it, and then she called me out of the class, and then she just started yelling at me outside of the class. And I was completely confused. I was terrified. My God, I started crying. Yeah, I was like, and she was like, why are you lying about this? This is not something to be lying about. And then I said, I'm not lying. Like, this is really what happened. And I'm just hoping, like, you can help. Of course, I wasn't this articulate back then. I was just like a dumb kid. I couldn't even.
How old were you then?
I was 10. Oh. I was 10, yeah. So, yeah, she just called me a liar. And then she said that the only way that I can prove that I'm not lying about this is if she got a chance to contact my parents. So that they can prove, not because she wanted to talk to them, it's because she just wanted to know if I was lying or not. And I said, I don't want you to call my parents because, like, my parents say, forget about this, right? And I'm like, the whole reason I wrote it in this journal is because I can't talk to them.
Yeah.
And then she just said, you either confess that you are a liar or I will bring you to the principal and I will call your parents to discuss this matter. So she put me in this like weird space, and I confessed to lying because I didn't know what else to do to prevent her from telling my parents. Okay. Yeah, so that was traumatizing.
Yeah, like it feels a bit strange. Like, I think it's also our culture sometimes that like we are more woke about mental health, but like in the past it's more like you just keep your struggles inside, like don't cause any more problems, like don't get people talking about you unnecessarily, that kind of stuff. Yeah. But like, if you don't talk about it, then that trauma just builds up. And like, okay, so we wanted to like backtrack a bit more also, because like, we know more of your story. So I guess to like clarify like some stuff lah. So like, you and your sister, like for you it happened when you were 7, right? Then for your sister, did it also happen when she was underage?
She was 13.
Yeah, so like both of you are like kind of like kids, right?
Yeah.
So like, how did like the whole situation go? Because it's like, you know, most of the cases that we hear is all like the people are of age. So it's like assault, but it's like of age. But this is like a little bit different because it's like it happened when you were so young. Like, you didn't even go through puberty yet. Like, I think your sister also barely went through puberty, and it's like wrong on like so many levels because it's like you just came into the world and like this happened to you.
I think so. I mean, this was a huge event in my life and my family's life, because my parents are immigrant family, like they came from India and they settled down here, and the whole reason they did that was because of how safe Singapore was compared to India, right? And when this happened right under our roof, that was a huge shift, and like a it kind of broke through this bubble that we had of Singapore. And being migrant parents here, my parents were trying so hard to make sure that we had a normal life, and they made a lot of rash decisions just trying to help us feel safe. You know, like my parents, my dad sold the house that we were, that I was abused in, and then we were moving around a lot because we hadn't found like another place to move out into yet. So we were renting, and we moved like 15 times within a span of like 6 years, 6-7 years, we moved like 15 times. So as much as I understand that my parents were just trying to help, like it also didn't give me the chance to grow up in a stable environment. So it was constantly, like the only constant was really just change. Every 6 months, I had to like move somewhere else. But yeah, like it's crazy like how this happened to us when we were children. But that's also when we are the most vulnerable, because we don't know a lot of things.
Yeah.
And people can very easily take advantage of that. And that's exactly what my abuser did lah. Like he just groomed me into believing that this was okay. Like he would tell me things like, this is what all parents would do.
Yeah.
this is what all parents do to show love. It's just that your parents are so busy, they cannot show you this love. This is how I show my love to my children. So he was a father of like two girls as well. So it perplexes me even more that that someone who have their own children could do this to another person's child.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And growing up, I thought it was my fault. Like, I thought, like, part of me was relieved that it didn't happen to my other two sisters as severely. Like, with my older sister, he was verbally a bit suggestive. Like, with me, he was very physically involved. Not, like, discrediting how much trauma that might have caused my sister, of course, because it's still terrifying. But, like, I'm glad it didn't happen. Nothing more happened to them. But at the same time, I wonder why it was me.
Yeah.
You know? And a lot of the times, I blamed myself for it. I thought that, you know, I was always up to some mischief. So my parents have also gotten used to just letting me be. So I was always trying to find some ways to make sense of it all, which I couldn't.
Yeah. I mean, you were so young and you didn't even have sex education until like the health class.
I wished, because my parents have spoken to me about good touch, bad touch. But it was always in like the perspective of a stranger. Like if a stranger comes to you in the playground, if the stranger comes to you in school, like it's always stranger. But this guy was not a stranger.
Yeah.
You know, and like that's the thing. We have this, we think that people who abuse us or people who are perpetrators are strangers or random shady men along the alleyway. But it's not the case. It's always people that are closest to us that tends to, you know, violate us in these kind of ways. Because they have our trust already. They're already a part of the inner circle. And when you trust somebody, the way you react to them when they violate you is also very different. There's a higher chance of you not reporting the person. There's a higher chance of you not telling anybody else because of your relationship with this person or your relationship with someone who's related to this person.
Yeah.
It's like, for instance, when my mom found out about it, and she was gonna file a police report, my dad was concerned about his family. Like, my dad was angry, of course, that this happened, but he was also like, do you think we should make a report? Because what about his family? He's here to like help his family back in India, right? And my dad, being a family man, understands what that's like. So I have no, like, I don't have anything against my dad thinking that way, you know? But my mom was, as a woman, I think she understood like how severe this is. And so she put her foot down and she said, no, we have to report this. He should have thought about his family.
Of course.
Yeah, he should have thought about his family. It's not on, the onus is not on us to worry about his family when he did something like this. Yeah,
exactly.
So my mom was woke in some ways, at least.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think that like hearing your story, like one thing that like we don't really hear very often also is the family believing or like supporting, or like you feel safe turning to your parents, because it's like such a vulnerable thing to say, and you kind of also kind of feel like, yeah, like would they believe me?
I think it's because my mom was the one who asked me, you know, like, because I didn't tell them for a year, because he told me, like my abuser told me, if I told them, that they would be heartbroken, because they'll be so heartbroken that they're not able to give me this love.
Yeah.
So he made it seem like if it's, I should be considerate and not tell them.
Yeah. Like playing with your mind, because you're so young, and he's like, oh yeah. Because we're so naive at that age. Yeah. We believe like almost everything because we don't really know what's going on. Yeah.
It was weird, man. Like now when I look back, like I just, I've forgiven everything because for myself, for my healing, I've forgiven it, but like, it's still sick, you know, it's still, it was a blatant manipulation that was happening because of my lack of understanding on the matter. Yeah. And that's why I firmly believe that knowledge is power. People do not understand how important it is for you to be informed, because when you're informed, you know what to do. You know what is happening. You can acknowledge it. You can address it. And I think that's also why, like, I'm a huge, advocate for like awareness in this matter, but from a more sex positive point of view, where we need to normalize conversations about consent, about sex, about female pleasure and all these things, because a lot of the times abuse also happens in intimate settings with partners, with husbands, boyfriends. And sometimes this abuse can also be in the form of not being able to, not being given your side of the intimacy that you need, right? Like, it's always one-sided pleasure, one-sided, like, these kind of things can also be abuse in some ways if someone is neglecting you.
So on that note, right, when you were growing up, yeah, and when you were in your teenage years, how did your experience affect the way that you saw the world or relationships and men?
That's always a good start.
That's such a
to
heavy
the
question.
Sense.
Yeah.
My God. I would say I definitely felt a huge responsibility towards justice. So I felt like in any situation, if I saw someone being helpless, I felt it was my duty to step in and support, because nobody did that for me. And I know what it's like to be in a situation where you are targeted and you feel stuck. You do not know what to do. But having someone else step in can help you feel more empowered. So it's like that whole bystander effect. Like, I just wanted to break the chain of the bystander effect. And I think I did that a lot in my secondary school. I kind of just used all my anger towards the abuse. I fueled that into just being a better version of myself, because I was relentless in my goal, which was to get to a place of influence and success where I can help more people, you know. So I was very focused on that, which I'm very grateful for, because I think I could have gone very much the other direction. Which is why representation means a lot, right? Because if it wasn't for the Oprah Winfrey passage that I read, that I would not have had that motivation. I would not have had this goal. And I think that's how I navigated most of my teenage years. I kind of stayed away from relationship for a while until I was 16. But I think I really just got into a relationship because I felt very pressured because everyone else was getting into a relationship.
Yeah.
And I wanted to live as normal a life as possible, because I wanted to show people that despite being abused and all, you can still live a normal life. But when I got into a relationship, then a lot of these like issues started surfacing. Things that I thought I had gotten over, clearly didn't. And intimate spaces with partners were very difficult for me to explore.
Yeah.
Yeah. But at the same time, it was very, I was exposed to a potential like emotional manipulation in partners. I was exposed to toxic patterns. A lot of things. I had to learn a lot of things about toxic relationships the hard way, because I had low self-esteem despite being this confident person on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
Because I genuinely thought that I was like a defective person. I thought I was like secondhand goods for some reason. It was like, I know it doesn't make logical sense to say this, but like in that moment, I felt like I had this tainted self, like this tainted past, which now makes me a less valuable person. And therefore, when my partner was doing something that was unacceptable, I accepted it because I was like, it's a privilege to even be in a relationship. You know, like when I was mistreated in a lot of ways, I accepted it because I genuinely believe that that's what I deserve. You know, I should not even be complaining because I have, at least I have a relationship. At least I have somebody loving me. So when something like this happens, when you go through abuse as a child, you grow up thinking that you are defective as a person. You do not have a choice in the matter. You grow up genuinely believing that, unless otherwise you have had therapy growing up, which I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Also because at that age, I really just fueled everything into self-improvement, my studies, everything, because I refused to be put into this box of being weak. And therapy seemed like something weak people would do at that time, because that was my own misconception of my mental health as well, you know. So I could not go and seek professional help in the matter, because I felt like then it doesn't serve my goal of being this strong person that I want to be.
Have you ever like considered like mental like health like counseling and stuff like that when you like got more informed to like help you?
Oh man, I feel it was, yeah. I did consider it, but it was like so scary to even, because when I, there's so much that I kept aside that I just did not address, that I was so terrified that if I sat down with someone and they start digging, it's just all like gonna Pandora's come out. Box, like, right? Yeah, it's like, yeah, a whole, it's this big can of worms that I need to open. And it was honestly, the idea, the thought of it was like super scary. But I finally went to see a therapist, and it felt a lot better, actually. Like, I saw a hypnotherapist first, and then I saw a proper therapist after. Like, I mean, not that hypnotherapists are not proper, but you get what I'm saying, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, okay, great. So, but that's also, that was another culture shock for me, because I always thought like going for therapy is like, you go there and you get this release. But like therapy was really more of like a slap to your face. It's a reality check on all the things that you need to work about yourself.
Yeah.
So it is, but it was still like the best decision I've made for my mental health, because you are faced with like just how much issues you have.
Yeah.
You have to sit there and acknowledge that, yeah, I have all these things to work out. But it's okay, we'll get there. Yeah.
Okay. So I guess like another question that we always get also, because we're not very familiar, is about like how the police system works in Singapore with these kind of cases. Mm. Yeah. So like for your case, like did you have to like go like did they investigate like you as a kid or like anything?
I think because I was a kid, there was not much investigation on me, because it's statutory rape.
Yeah.
You know, it's statutory. Like, as long as you're a minor and anyone did anything to you sexually, like, that is automatically, they will be criminalized. Yeah. But it's not always the case for adults. Yeah. For me as a child, I have very vague memories of all of it. And what I do remember is having, like, a translator. A lovely Indian lady was wearing sari. I remember that because she would wrap her sari around me when in the investigation room, because it was very cold. So like these kind of things I remember about it. And then I remember being in the courtroom, but I wasn't in the courtroom itself. I was in a separate room by myself, because I was too young to be in the courtroom. So they had to put like a webcam and and a TV and all of those things. So I could see the courtroom, but I wasn't there myself. I had to be separated. As for like how everything else worked, I think in my case, I was very fortunate because everyone was pretty sensitive. I remember bringing up a certain point after the investigation, like somewhere around the court time, then I brought up another detail that I apparently had missed out earlier. And I remember one of the investigating officers were asking my mom, like, why didn't she bring this up sooner? Like, something like that. And then my mom was like, I don't know, you know, because I mean, like, that's how it is.
Child,
like, yeah, I'm a child. Like, I half the time, I do not even know what the hell I'm saying.
Yeah.
But yeah, I felt like in that moment, my credibility might have been a bit questioned. But this is once again just based off of a very vague memory of my childhood. More recent experiences would be based on friends' experiences. Like, I have a bunch of friends who've also encountered sexual violence, and when they go to the police station, they've experienced very negative experiences. I've had a friend who was sexually assaulted by a Grab driver. And she took about 4 days to make the report because she was still contemplating. So she made the report, and then the police officer, who was also a lady, asked her if she really encountered it. Like, is she bored? Is that why she's making this report? Or like, basically asked her why it took her 4 days to come forward to make a report. But the thing is that there's already a brochure on the police Singapore headquarters website where it talks about sexual violence and how they're going to handle these things. And in that brochure, they talk about how you don't have to immediately report it and stuff like that. Yeah, so it was quite hypocritical because I feel like there's a lot of these like reassuring signs on the website and all, but the actual experiences that you get when you go and make a report is very, very different.
Yeah.
And it's very scary, especially when you're already feeling, when you've been assaulted, you're always thinking about whether people are going to believe you.
Mm-mm.
There's this constant doubt that victims experience, which is, is someone going to believe me, right? So when you go to the police station and you try to make a report and police ask you questions like, are you sure you didn't enjoy it? Are you sure you didn't want it? These kind of things, actual questions that police have asked victims in Singapore, it really discourages you from proceeding forward. So all the friends that I have, only one of them actually fully went through with an investigation. The rest of them who filed a report withdrew from the investigation because they just couldn't sit through another session of police scrutinizing them and their intentions for making a report.
Actually we've heard like similar stories,
but we've also heard like some people did succeed in,
I mean, for your case your perpetrator got jailed, right?
Yes, but that's also because I was a child. I don't know how different my situation would have been if I was an adult. Yeah.
That's not to say that when, you know, you're in a situation like this, you probably should go, if, you know, you shouldn't let some of these negative experiences dictate whether or not you file a police report.
But that's the thing. It's like, it's easy for us to say that, but when you are traumatized, you're already feeling unsafe.
Yeah.
Just living.
It's kind of hard, like we cannot like say anything because it's like at the end of the day, it's each individual's choice.
Yeah, and it's a lot of it's a very exhausting process to go through the legal system, and to sit through court hearings, and then you don't even know what the outcome is gonna be.
Yeah,
you know, like sometimes a victim has recovered better by just moving forward on their own.
Like therapy and stuff.
Rather than making a report. And a lot of times I feel like we put a lot of pressure on victims to report and have the moral obligation to do what is right by getting someone into jail for their crimes. But the thing is that like the system doesn't allow it. The system is not empowering victims to do that because the system is constantly scrutinizing victims instead.
I think I understand because it's like, this is really, really tricky to talk about, like to our listeners also, because we don't want to say like, you know, that the police are bad or that, you know, reporting is bad, but we also don't want to say that like, you know, if you report then things are going to be good, because it's really a gray area thing. Yeah, like exactly right, that the system is a bit flawed, and like I guess we also want to raise awareness that the system is flawed, like that, you know, sometimes like even if you report, like you might not get the justice that you deserve.
Or, I think like, more than sorry to interrupt you, like more than just the system being flawed. Yes, there are some flaws in the system, but I think it's really more on like the lack of training.
Yeah.
The trauma-centric training that police officers lack is the actual issue here.
Yeah.
And I feel like when it comes to sexual assault cases, there needs to be specialized trauma-informed officers who should navigate the investigation rather than just anyone who's available. Because it is a very different kind of a situation. It's a very invasive thing. And the person who has gone through sexual violence, unlike any situation in murder, like the person who's the victim is already dead in the murder case. For a sexual violence case, the victim is still alive and has to live with this experience for the rest of their life.
Yeah.
And this trauma is going to affect every part of their life. It is like having lived through it myself, I've seen how it impacts my family. I've seen how it impacts my relationships, my own self-esteem, my feelings of competence, like how much I can contribute to society. Like there's so many layers to how fragmented my life has become ever since the abuse.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of work that goes into trying to fix it, trying to glue them all back together so I can live. a normal life, which a lot of people don't see.
So on that note, right, I think because we found you through social media, right, so we wanted to know, so like, what was the thing that propelled you to want to share your story, especially after, like, you were told by your family, you know, like, repress this, don't talk about this?
I think it's because I strongly, strongly felt that we needed to talk about this, and nobody else was talking about it.
Yeah.
No one else was talking about it, not in the Indian community, not even in, on a Singapore context. And I knew of AWARE, but even then, when I first started talking about sexual violence, AWARE was really speaking more about like gender inequality rather. Like, sexual violence kind of fell under gender inequality, but there wasn't a specific discussion on the matter. And growing up, I learned a lot about how prevalent this issue is, because with every girlfriend that I spoke to, they also had their own like experiences to tell me about. And I was like, it's not a coincidence that every person I talk to has a shared experience. It cannot be a coincidence. So if this is happening so profoundly, why are we not talking about it? How is it that we're allowing our women in the women in our life to live through all this? Why are we not doing anything about it? So that kind of pushed me to just talk about it. And I applied to uni at the time, and as part of a scholarship program, I did like this three-piece artwork, which was about, the topic was to really show or express what I have overlooked on a day-to-day basis. And I spoke about my life, like my body basically, and how as a result of abuse, I have also been abusing my body to a place of exhaustion and neglect. So I told myself that if I do get the scholarship, I would post about this publicly. So I ended up getting the scholarship and I posted this publicly, and that's how I first came out to talk about my story. And from there, I've been a bit more vocal. And yeah, that's how I got into the advocacy scene. And right around then was also when Me Too movement had a global reach. So that's also when AWARE started talking about sexual violence specifically. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I connected with them. It just kind of all happened organically. And then AWARE invited me to be a part of their volunteer team for the Aim for Zero campaign, which is a follow-up to the Me Too campaign.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So it was more like call to action, because now we know this is an issue. We've addressed this as an issue. Yep. Now what? How are we going to cultivate a society that is safe, that tolerates zero sexual violence?
Yeah.
Right? So that's what Aim for Zero is about. And I was one of the spokesperson for that campaign. Mm. And that's how I started my volunteer work with AWARE.
That's so cool, actually. Yeah.
I kind of want to go back to, I guess, the relationship your part. Mm. Because we understand now you are in a relationship.
Yeah,
and you also mentioned that throughout your teen years, there was a lot of like manipulation and like very toxic traits that came up in your relationship. So maybe, like, how did that work out for you?
I would say it's opened my eyes to who I am in a relationship. Because I think who we are as a person versus who we are in a relationship is very different. Like, the dynamic that we have with another person brings out a different side to us. So I was able to understand that side of me better. And that's when I realized that because of how I viewed myself as this defective person, I tend to overcompensate by giving a lot.
Yeah.
And by like doing everything in my power to please this other person, which then can become a problem, because that's a space that someone can manipulate you with. So identifying that has helped me to, you know, become a bit more mindful. So in my current relationship, there's a lot more honest conversations. There's a lot more transparency in the matter. There's a lot more healthy boundaries that we're both setting for each other and for ourselves. And in that matter, I think I'm very blessed that I've kind of worked through all those issues of like beliefs of self-defectiveness and all that. I've worked through all of that. So now I'm able to allow a good, healthy relationship to exist.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like where we both understand each other's trauma, we both understand what is healthy, what's not healthy, and we both have the capacity to communicate in a healthy way.
How about like for friendships? Because you mentioned when you first like started sharing, you lost a lot of friends, right? So how do you like navigate?
I didn't lose a lot of friends when I started sharing. I lost a lot of friends when I became weird. What a weird way to say it, right?
No, I kind of understand.
Like, it's like when I became very different, you know, like it became a lot more... I was dissociated in a lot of ways, you know, like I was, people talk to me and I'm like, you know, I'm not responding, I'm not, so people thought it was kind of weird and then they just stopped being my friends. So that's what happened. But I think afterwards when they realized that it was because I was dealing with this whole, you know, revelation, they understood, but it also made me feel a bit alienated. But there were some friends who couldn't, like there were more relationships that couldn't handle the fact that I had been abused than friends. I think friends were quite okay, like my friends really understood. A lot of them actually didn't know until I came out and spoke about it publicly. It's only a handful of people at different gatherings, different social settings that I spoke to about my story. It was very random.
I mean, like, I guess, how did your parents react when you decided to, like, start talking about it?
I told them about it. Like, I never did anything without informing them because I know that I still wanted to respect them, but I wanted to tell them, like, look, I'm an adult now. Like, I'm 21 now, and I think I know what I can do, and this is going to help me in my process, and I want you to just trust me here. So I think my parents were just kind of too shocked about this sudden bringing up of this topic that they just didn't have anything to say. And I think they were very worried about how people would receive it, how people would look at it and how they might react to me. But I was confident. I had a feeling that it's going to be good. It'll be okay. And then when it was okay, then my parents realized that I actually know what I'm doing. So after that, they've been very supportive. And even now, they are still quite supportive.
Okay.
Do you want to like just share any like helplines that, you know, people can reach out to or anything?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So if you are ever in a situation where you have experienced assault and you want to make a report, I always recommend reaching out to AWARE because they have befriending services where they will actually guide you through the whole legal process of things. So at least you will be better informed and you have an ally by your side to guide you through these things to ensure that you have the best possible experience going through the reporting system. And they know what's right, what questions they can ask, what questions police cannot ask you. Like all these things, AWARE is a lot more familiar with it. So the employees there will assist you with that. Other than that, if you have experienced this kind of things and you want some emotional support, of course, same thing. Just reach out to AWARE as well. AWARE is the only organization that has a sexual assault care center in Singapore who have that place. There's a lot of wonderful, amazing human beings who are so trauma-informed that they will not make you feel ashamed of anything at all. Like it's very survivor first.
Okay.
Like they prioritize you and your sense of safety more than procedures and what you need to do. So they will not force you to make a report. They will not compel you into doing anything you do not want to. They will not force you to talk about your incident. They will just give you the support that you need.
And it's completely free, right?
Like the call helplines are free. I think they will ask, if they ask you to come in and have a chat also, I think should be free. But if you want to go for like counseling sessions, they provide counseling sessions as well. Those that are paid ones, and I think it's a percentage of your income. It's a bit, it's on the more affordable range. Yeah.
Okay.
I think so with that, we've come to the end of our episode 3. You've heard like Devika's story and it is very emotionally heavy. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that most of the issues that you went through in the past are more or less worked out now.
Yeah.
And that, you know, anyone who has gone through this or is going through this, I hope you find some comfort in knowing that you're not alone, and there are helplines to reach out to, and people that have gone through the same experience that you have. Have a good week, and thank you, Devika, for coming on.
Thank you for having me, guys. I had a lot of fun. Thank you.
Okay, have a good week, and goodbye.
Bye. Bye.